morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Sorry I'm late. I didn't have this on my calendar.
Well, we're here.
I'm glad you're here. Do we have lights?
Yes.
So, I'm Dr. Chris Fields. How many of you been to this talk previously? Okay. So, I am an optometrist. I was at Dartmouth Hitchcock for 10 and a half years. I'm now in private practice down on the Miracle Mile right next to Hubert's. One of my specialties in practice is low vision, which is to help people with partial sight see better with the sight that they have, and also with doing everything we can to prevent the partial sight from getting any worse. And the biggest advantage that we have with that is through nutritional supplementation and early diagnosis, so that we're not getting to the point of surgery or other interventions, which are very effective. But if earlier diagnosis or supplementation along the course of surgical treatment can prolong the effect of that treatment or delay progression, then that's where my emphasis is. So I still work very closely with all of the surgeons at Dartmouth Hitchcock, but at the same time, my goal is to keep you out of the surgeon, unless we need to. So when I do this talk to you folks, I don't come in with a canned lecture and project slides. I generally like to just do it as an open-ended question and answer. And because a lot of you are here because you have questions, you're interested in your nutritional support as your eyes age, and you may know somebody or yourself may have changes in your vision. So instead of coming in and trying to figure out what you might want to hear, I find it usually better just to have an hour and a half discussion about what you guys want to hear about. And the time usually disappears faster than we all realize. So with that, I'm just going to open it up to questions. If somebody has a question.
I'm going to hit a pass.
Yes.
Any particular supplements you'd recommend?
Well, it depends on what disease we're talking about.
I just age old age.
So in terms of just general aging, and you have an otherwise normal, healthy eye, then it really comes down to the age-old wisdom of a diet that's very high in fruits and vegetables. Because your body will absorb the nutrients that it needs, for the most part, and unless there is some sort of active disease process that we're trying to intervene with, then just general good health is really all you need. So there's no specific nutritional, you know, combination that you need if your body and your eyes are otherwise healthy. What you do want to do, though, is make sure you're wearing sunglasses when you're outdoors for any extended period of time for ultraviolet protection, and don't smoke. Or if you're smoking, to try to stop smoking, which is, if you're a previous smoker, you all understand is easier said than done. But smoking is probably the worst thing from an eye standpoint that you can do. And the reason for that is your retina is very highly vascularized. It's got blood vessels in the retina and under the retina. And so your retina constantly is converting light energy into an electrical stimulus that goes into your brain, and that's where the picture is made back here in your brain. So your eye really functions the same way as your satellite dish functions for your television at home. It receives the signal, and it takes that signal, converts it into an electrical signal, which then goes to your brain, and your brain decodes that electrical signal and creates vision. So, contrary to the adage of that we see with our eyes, we really don't. We see with our brains, but we don't see with our eyes. But the retina is constantly converting that electrical energy, or that light energy, into an electrical signal. And so the turnover rate, or what we call the retinal recharge rate, of when a retina cell gets fired to send the signal and it has to recharge and get ready to do it again, is very, very high. And so it burns through oxygen and nutrients faster than any other organ in our body. So when you smoke, all you're doing is combining that nice fresh air and the nutritional vitamins that you've been eating in your diet with all the stuff that's in the cigarette. And it's all competing for the same real estate on the red blood cell to be transported to your body and deposited into the tissue. And your red blood cell can only carry so much. And so if it's polluted with the contents of the cigarette smoke, then it can't pick up oxygen, and it can't pick up the vitamin C, and it can't pick up the vitamin A that it needs to take to the retina to keep it healthy. So over time, you're just slowly creating a situation where you have malnutrition to your retina. And that is one of the leading components of the progression of things like glaucoma, diabetic retinopathy, macular degeneration, all the three leading things that are affecting our vision as we age that can cause permanent vision loss. So, you know, to stand up here and be yet another doctor that says, you gotta stop smoking, I mean, I understand it's easier said than done. But the science behind it is because you're just putting things in your bloodstream that are going to the cells and the cells can do nothing with it. And so it just takes up space. So it's just a trade that you're making for fresh air and nutrients. Other questions? Yes?
Yeah. What is the story on floaters?
Okay.
Because my floaters are constant and they drive me crazy, especially right. when I'm driving.
Yeah. So the floaters, let's see if we've got some pens here, because I like to draw. I'm a visual person. So the floaters are just part of the gel that's inside your eye.
Right.
So they're not going to go anywhere. You're stuck with them. But they can move to a different location. So if our eye, here's your cornea. This is what's called the sclera, or the white of the eye. This is your optic nerve. So your cornea, this, and then you've got the iris. That makes your pupil. And then behind the iris, you've got the lens. And then this whole, so let's see, let's change this so we can get some color in here. Next to the white of the eye, you've got your retina. Okay. And then the rest of the inside of the eye is all encapsulated in a very tiny membrane called the vitreous. So this gel space here, the vitreous, is only attached to the eye in two places. It attaches around the optic nerve. Now the optic nerve in diameter is about 1.5 millimeters in diameter. So it's pretty tiny. But just as a side note, inside that 1.5 millimeters, you have 1 million nerve fibers going to your brain from each eye. So you've got 10 million cells in your retina, and they converge down to 1 million cables. Think of it as a fiber optic cable. So you've got 1 million fibers going through your optic nerve to go to your brain. And every one of these fibers corresponds to another fiber in the other eye. So your brain gets an input from a single location on the retina that has a single fiber, and that location corresponds to the same location in space as your other eye. Both of those fibers go to the same cell in your brain, and your brain looks at whichever has the strongest signal, which is why you can have damage in one eye and not know it, because your brain gives you the best of either eye. It doesn't average it. So a lot of people will get something in their eye, and they go to rub their eye, and then they do this, and they go, well, I can't see out of this eye. I better go see the eye doctor and find out what's going on. So things can lurk in your vision without you knowing it, which is why annual eye exams are important, because we can see these changes before they occur. So, and then the vitreous attaches up here in the front on all the way around the iris, and that diameter is about 13 millimeters in diameter. Okay? And within the vitreous, there are very tiny microscopic fibers that run through this, and that's what creates the jello-type consistency. So when we're young, if we could take an eyeball and dump it out on the counter, the vitreous would come out of the eye and they would just wobble around on the countertop like a jellyfish. It would.
Oh, good.
When we're older, you do the same thing and the vitreous just comes out and runs across the table like water. So over our lifetime, not because we did anything but other than live, this jello converts to liquid. But these fibers are solids, so they don't dissolve. But what they do is, as the vitreous is liquefying, they collapse like tiny little spider webs. And then when the light comes in your eye at the right angle, it casts a shadow onto your retina that you see as your floater. Which is why they're not going to go anywhere. Think of it as a hairball floating in oil. Because that's about the density. It's really, really light. It's solid enough and dense enough to create a shadow, but it's not heavy enough just to sink through the fluid. Eventually, these fibrils contract and they get pulled closer to the front of the eye, which means shadow fades. So eventually, over time, your floaters will disappear.
Yeah.
Eventually. I didn't give you 6 weeks or 6 months. And so they'll move out of your line of sight, but they're always there. And depending on the angle of the light, the brighter the light, the more even the light, like looking at a whiteboard like this,
yeah,
you see the floaters. But you turn around and you look out across the window to where the forest is, and there's so much imagery, your floater's lost in the picture, but it's still there, which is why you see them. So the key, if the floaters are really bothering you when you're driving, wear sunglasses. Decrease the intensity of the light.
Also, what I do is I keep the visor down.
Or that.
Definitely on cloudy days and snowy days and stuff, I keep it down to a level where I'm not quite... But boy, when I first started getting them, it drove me absolutely insane.
Right, because they're always moving. You think there's something in your periphery. Because as you move your eye, these aren't solid. You move your eye and it floats.
Right.
You move your eye and it floats. And our eyes are in constant motion.
Right.
You cannot hold your eye still if you wanted to. It's always wiggling. And the reason it's always wiggling is if the retina is presented an image and it just stays there and it never moves, the retina will stop responding to it. So if your eye is constantly moving, then that image is constantly moving across the retina, even in a microscopic way, but there's motion, and so the retina cell fires every time that image crosses it and activates it.
Cool.
So a really easy way to test this is if you have a tile floor at home, when you're really bored, get a chair, sit down, and look at an intersection of the tile. Just stare at it. And in about 10 seconds, the whole floor will become the same color. All the grout lines will disappear. And as soon as you blink, they come right back. Because you've chopped that light image from a steady image into another piece. And so it re-stimulates, which is why blinking not only keeps the surface of the eye moist, it's chopping the light up into signals that are coming into the eye in bursts, and that's what activates the retina. Okay? Now, so this is the cornea, the front dome of the eye. And it is coated with a tear film, and that is critical to our eyes because it's what keeps our eye moist. And so if the surface of the eye dries out, the quality of your vision will go down. So how many of you have heard of dry eye? Right. And how many of you have been told by your eye doctors that if your eyes are dry, just use an artificial tear? Well, because that is the easiest answer they can give you, is to use an artificial tear, because you're adding volume to your tear film and you're keeping your eye moist. But our eyes are constantly circulating tears. So as soon as you put the drop on your eye, you blink a few times, it's gone down the drain, and that tear volume is back to where it was before. 20 minutes later, your eye's drying out again. 40 minutes later, you can't stand it anymore, so you put another drop in your eye. to effectively use an artificial tear, you would have to put the eye drop in your eye 10 or 12 times a day. Now, who's got that much time in their hand to stop and do that? Nobody.
Or want to.
Or want to. But yet, a bottle of artificial tears will cost you anywhere from $10 to $15 at the store. So, my humble opinion is that the artificial tear is a billion-dollar market that doesn't do anything. Except sell you tears. I'm interested in solving the problem, which is, if your eyes are dry, you need a better tear film. Your body is what produces the tear film. The most effective way that we have of building your tear film is with omega-3 essential fatty acids.
Fish oil.
Yes, fish oil. Now, how many of you have been told to take fish oil for your dry eye? The key is, and by the way, that's the answer I always get, unless you're my patient. The key is 2,000 milligrams daily. It doesn't matter whether it's fish oil, flaxseed oil, evening primrose oil, the derivative doesn't make any difference.
Oh, that's why I was taking it.
That's why you were taking it. So, the omega-3s will, within 2 weeks, you'll start to notice an improvement in the comfort of your eyes and overall stability of your vision over the course of the day. And within a month, it'll be stabilized and you just keep taking 2,000 milligrams. Yes, sir?
Why does that happen?
Why does it work?
Yes.
Because in the eyelid, there are these tiny little glands. How many of you have heard of getting a sty?
Yeah.
Right. So a sty is when this gland produces oil. And the oil bubbles up on the surface of the eyelid. And every time you blink, it mixes with the watery component of your tear film, and it creates an oily film that coats your eye.
So it enhances the viscosity?
Right.
Yeah.
That's right. And which is a critical component of your tear film. So if I took it a bucket of water and threw it across the window, it would go against the window and run right off. But if I took that bucket of water and mixed oil into it and emulsified it, put it on the window, it would create a film that would then eventually fall off. And you need the oil in the tear film to stick to this vertical surface of your eye. Otherwise, it just runs off. So your eye is constantly dry. And if your eye is constantly dry, then on the outside of our eyebrow, we look at our eyes here. Here's our nose. Okay. By the way, I'm not an artist. Nobody buys my art. But in the eye system, we've got a tear canal system that is constantly draining the fluid off of our eye and into our nose. Okay? And underneath the outer corner of our eyebrow, we've got a gland called the lacrimal gland. Okay? It's tucked up underneath here. The lacrimal gland is like the fire hydrant to the eyeball. It is designed to flush the eyes with tears if you get something in your eye. Or if you're crying, but you get this volume of liquid tears, no oil, just water, that's meant to flush your eye. But if this tear film is breaking up and it's not keeping your eyes moist, then the brain says, hey, the cornea's got to be moist, turn on this gland, flush the eye with tears, and now you get tears dripping down your cheek because you've got more tears than can go down the drain. So when a patient comes in and says, my eyes tear all the time, especially when I go outside in the wind, they have dry eye. And they just said, wait a minute, I just told you my eyes wet all the time. And you're saying my eyes are dry. They're dry, which is stimulating this. So when you take an omega-3 and you get a better tear film, this turns off. So your eye stops tearing.
Is there do you do one a day or?
You take 2,000 milligrams. They either come in 1,000 milligrams or 500 milligrams.
Okay.
Take them both in the morning. Take it all in the morning.
All in the morning.
Yep.
Okay.
Now, but this is why it's important to talk with your doctor before you take anything. Omega-3s are blood thinners.
Oh.
Also. So if you're on Coumadin, Warfarin, take a full dose of aspirin every day. You don't want to take an omega-3 without talking to your doctor first. Because as much as you may need it for the tear film, you don't want to make the effect of the Coumadin higher because you're taking a blood thinner as a natural supplement.
You can't substitute like ground flaxseed for that. Probably would take too much.
That's correct. You cannot. Because our bodies do not do a good job of digesting seeds.
Even
if it's ground up. The seed works much better as a fiber supplement. Which is good. You'll get some omega-3 out of it. But
right.
You can't eat enough flaxseed for as little as our body extracts out of the flaxseed to have an effect on the eye.
And people, older people, whose eyelids seem to invert.
Right.
What causes that?
So the number one cause for that is you get, you've seen older people sometimes, you know, as we all get older, our skin gets softer. And so it starts to droop. And our eye is cushioned in the globe by fat. Okay? So we've got this big layer of fat, and then we've got the bony floor of the eye that comes back, and that's what creates our orbit. So if you've ever looked at a skull where the eyes are, it's kind of shaped like an ice cream cone. But around the eyeball is all this fat, because otherwise our eye would be, as we walked, would just be banging against bone. So you have to have this cushion. And in the eyelid, there is a collagen plate, like a tendon, that kind of works like a dam to hold it all back. But as our skin gets more elastic as we get older, we lose the tensile strength of our skin, this softens and then this can start to prolapse or push it forward, which is why a lot of people get the bagginess underneath the skin. And then just the weight of that alone can pull the eyelid down and start to pull this away from the eye. So if the eyelid is pulled away from the eye, so it's more like this, okay? And here's the white of the eye. You don't have enough tear film to fill all this up and still keep your eye moist. So your eye's becoming dry and irritated because your eyelid isn't up against the globe of the eyeball. Okay, or you can have scar tissue that pulls, you know, if you had a scar on your face, scar tissue shrinks over time and pulls, and it can pull the eyelid down. So there's usually some sort of mechanical reason why the eyelid is being pulled away from the eye. And you'll see that on patients because you see the red at the inside of the eye, and it gets really red on the eyelid as it gets dried out. So the solution to that is the surgeon goes in, makes an incision, takes out a little bit of tissue, and pulls these two pieces together, okay? Just like doing a hem on the inside of a piece of fabric, you pull it together, and that pulls the eyelid back up and puts it back in position. And that can be really effective for helping patients whose eyelids are mechanically pulled away from the eye. There's not a supplement in the world you can do to put it back. You have to mechanically put it back in place. But it's a very routine procedure that's done by what's called an oculoplastics ophthalmologist. It's an ophthalmologist who specializes in eyelids.
So when you were talking about the gland in... That one, yes. Is that, obviously it's protected by bone.
Right.
If you injured that area, would that reduce the amount that could do that?
Absolutely.
And what kind of injury would it need to be?
You'd have to have some sort of structural injury to the eye or the bone to even get to that, because it's
well underneath the bone.
Okay.
It's not easily reached. You've had a question.
Yes, I have floaters. Will I continue to get more and more floaters? And where do they really come from?
Well, the floaters are what we talked about here with the, so whether you'll get more or not depends on how they will, how those fibrils collapse. But generally, you kind of reach a peak and then they start to dissipate. But they will always be there. So,
well, where do they come from? The side of the eye, or
no? They're part of the gel that's inside the eye.
Well, you get them by somebody by banging your head or something?
Nope, just by living. And your eyes are constantly moving and shaking up, and so you're shaking this jelly around, and these little fibers stick together like cobwebs, and
they just sort of fall apart from the inside. Then.
Right. Yep. And they're sealed inside the eye. The only way to take them out would be you'd have to open the eye and take this gel out and replace it with something else, which is what they do during retinal detachment surgery, but they don't do it for floaters.
Yeah.
And the floaters aren't dense enough to shoot a laser at and break them up with a laser. There's just not, for a laser to work, the light energy from the laser has to come in and be absorbed by the tissue that you're treating. And this just, it's like those little dust bunnies you get behind your couch, and in the springtime you pull your couch away from the wall and you're like, holy cow, and you go to pick it up and there's no mass to it, it's just a bunch of
dust.
Do
they remove the floaters when you have cataract surgery?
No. When you have cataract surgery, this lens is taken out of the eye and replaced with an artificial lens, but this vitreous space is left intact. Because if this membrane is broken, then the vitreous gel can seep forward and into the front of the eye. It doesn't happen very often, but it can happen. And so if that happens, then they have to go in and replace that gel. So the surgeon works very hard not to disrupt that front surface of the membrane, and very rarely does that happen, but it can.
Now that you've cataracts have been mentioned, all my friends have had cataract surgery, and I'm thinking, oh gosh, isn't it nice I haven't had it? I don't have cataracts.
You do.
And it seemed like my vision was getting better. I'd take my glasses off when I was driving at night, and I could see better than with my glasses. So I went to my eye doctor for my annual exam, and he did the eye tests. He says, yeah, you're right, your vision is better. You're 20/20. I said, that's great. He said, no, it's not. You have cataracts starting. I'm like, what? And he said, it's because your lens is changing shape. Can you explain all that?
I can. Yep. Before I do that, the gentleman behind you had a question.
Talking about omega-3s.
Mm-hmm.
Being a blood thinner, if you're taking a baby aspirin on a daily basis, which is a blood thinner, is it possible to substitute, let's say, a fish oil capsule for a baby aspirin and get the same effect?
So I get asked that a lot, and my answer back to you as my patient is, why are you taking the baby aspirin?
For a blood thinner.
Right, but did your doctor prescribe it, or are you taking it because it's just general good advice?
No, it's prescribed.
Okay, so the answer is probably yes, but you'd want to talk to your primary care doctor about what specifically are you taking that baby aspirin for. If his philosophy is, well, your general good health, we know as we get older, risk of heart attack and stroke increase, so my philosophy is it's a good idea to take a half an aspirin, then, and I believe that that's good health advice, then combining that with an omega-3 probably makes it equivalent to taking a full aspirin. And so he may say, yeah, just take them both. Or he may say, you know, you're in such good health, but yeah, we want to have a little bit of a blood thinner effect, so take the omega-3s and drop the aspirin.
Interesting.
There's no magic answer, but combining the baby aspirin with this much omega-3,
right,
is probably closer to the equivalent of just taking a normal full dose aspirin, which again, a lot of people do just for the health benefit of it.
One further question. With ARMD,
yep,
at what point is a person considered legally blind as a result of a degeneration of the retina?
So I'm just gonna put that up here because I wanna, that's kind of a different topic. But it's important, so I'll get to that after we do the cataract.
Okay.
So, a cataract is a natural process within your eye. And I can guarantee that all of you sitting in this room have some stage of a cataract. And how do I know that? Because I'm betting all of you in this room are over the age of 50.
It's a good bet.
If I'm wrong, then tell me afterwards. But a cataract starts forming the day you're born. Okay? It doesn't need surgery until it becomes what we call visually significant, meaning it's interfering with your vision. The average age of somebody needing cataract surgery in this country is 68. Okay? In New England, it's probably closer to 72 to 78. Why is that? Because we have less ultraviolet light exposed to us over the course of our lifetime in New England than we would if we lived in Georgia. Okay? So, a cataract, the way to understand what a cataract looks like, when I look at a cataract, is how many of you remember the convertible cars from the 50s and 60s that had the canvas tops with the plastic window in the back? See, you all just aged yourself.
You already did.
That plastic window, if it's left in the sunlight, became the hazy, yellowish, brownish color. At that point, your car is getting a cataract. Okay, a cataract is just a Latin term to say that a clear image is becoming cloudy. So, if you've ever read any of the Lewis and Clark history, and they talk about having to portage around the cataract, they're portaging around a waterfall. So the water in the river is clear until it goes over the waterfall, then it becomes non-clear. So the term for a waterfall was cataract. It just means a non-translucent window. So when the car's window became that hazy, yellowish, brownish color, you put up with it. And then it got a little cloudier. And then when you look in the rearview mirror, you'd see more glare from headlights. And then it would get a little cloudier. And you'd say, you know, I really should replace that window. Because the only way to see better out of the window is to replace it. And if you chose not to replace it, eventually you wouldn't see anything out of the window. And that's what a cataract is. If you do nothing about it, eventually it would get so cloudy you would go blind. Which is why cataracts are the number one leading cause of blindness in the world. Because people in Africa, Central America, South America don't have access to cataract surgery like we do in this country, so they go blind with cataracts. Very rarely does somebody go blind from a cataract in this country because we have access to a surgeon. But as the lens grows in our eye over our lifetime, it's adding layers to itself like layers of an onion. So it's getting a little thicker. Okay? But this lens remains flexible. It's like a magnifying glass that you could change shape to. And there's tiny little fibrils that support this lens that are attached to this muscle down here. And this muscle contracts and it makes the lens thinner, or it relaxes and the lens gets thicker. And that's what allows our range of focus to change.
And get astigmatism.
Right. No, astigmatism is on the surface of the cornea.
Oh, okay.
But on the, as we live, this lens doesn't have any blood vessels in it. So it can't circulate the products that the cells are creating, because the cells are living and any living cell creates waste. So it takes in nutrients, burns them up, and then it creates waste product. And that waste product builds up inside the lens. And then when ultraviolet light comes through the lens, it oxidizes those lipids and proteins. So over time, it gets cloudier. And it's also becoming less flexible, which is why when we get into our 40s, we suddenly can't do this. And we all need bifocals or reading glasses, because our lens can't change shape to take us from there to here clearly. So then you have to start wearing glasses to go from there to here. And that process continues, and this lens is hardening, like really slow curing cement, but as it hardens, it changes shape, which is what's happening to your eye. As the lens changes shape, It's changing in a direction that happens to be advantageous to you, so your vision is now better without your glasses than it was with your glasses.
Temporarily.
Well, but it can be temporarily for years.
Yeah.
Okay, because your vision's still 20/20. So the fact that you're developing a cataract doesn't mean you're on the fast track to the operating room. Right?
Okay.
Your vision has to decrease. In other words, get cloudy enough to where you become aware of it, that even with your glasses off, now it feels like you need to put glasses back on, but when you do, it's still blurry.
Okay.
And that's generally when your vision is around the 20/40 level. Okay, which is still very good vision, but it's also the cutoff for getting a license in most states, for a driver's license. So if your vision is worse than 20/40, the DMV will say, go get your eyes checked, because we have a law in the state that says your vision has to be better than 20/40 to drive. If I can't get your vision better than 20/40 because of a cataract, then we refer you for cataract surgery. Because the surgeon takes this cloudy lens out of your eye and replaces it with a clear artificial lens. And that clear artificial lens happens to have the prescription for your glasses built into it, which is why most people after cataract surgery don't need distance driving glasses. Okay?
Can you slow down the process at all, or is it just...
You can slow down the process if, when you're very young, you're very good at wearing sunglasses. Mm. The answer is no. For instance, for you, you're just now told that you've got a cataract. But they've been smoldering for a long time. They just weren't interfering with your vision. So if you became religious and started wearing ultraviolet protection every time you went outdoors, you might save yourself a day between when you need cataract surgery versus if you don't. Okay? I mean, this is not a health issue to the eye. It's a life issue. It's no more significant to us than getting gray hair. And gray hair doesn't make us less healthy. It just means we've lived long enough that our hair turns gray. But so what? It doesn't mean I'm not healthy. It just means it's gray. My brothers remind me every time I see them how much more gray I have since the last time they saw me. But the lens in the eye getting cloudy is a natural living process. If your dog lives long enough, they get a cataract. If your horse lives long enough, they get a cataract. Any living being that has an eye will get a cataract. Because it's just part of time. The only way to avoid cataract surgery is don't live long enough to need it. That's not what I prescribe. Yes, sir.
So, what is this notion about the lens getting ripe?
Okay. So that term was really originated back in the original days of cataract surgery, when it was became kind of common to be able to do cataract surgery. And we didn't have the lenses that go inside the eye that we do now. So the lens that would go back inside the eye was a solid, they're solid plastic now, but they're very flexible. So the surgeon would have to make an incision about halfway around your eye to be able to open it up, and then he literally had a hook that he'd put into this, and he would slide it out of your eye, like the seed out of a grape. So the lens had to be ripe enough that when the hook was hooked into it, it wouldn't slide out like a hook in butter, because the lens is very soft. So at a younger age, there's not enough density, he couldn't hook it and pull it out. So you had to wait till it was ripe, meaning dense enough, cloudy enough, unfocusable enough, that they could hook it and pull the whole thing out as one unit. Now, the surgery is done through an incision that is a stepwise type incision. It's about 3 millimeters in size, and a little tiny probe, your eye is dilated so the pupil gets pulled back, and there's a probe that's put in here, and it uses ultrasound to break it up like a mini jackhammer, breaks up the lens and vacuums out the pieces as it's broken up. And then, so this is removed from inside just by basically scooping it out like an ice cream scoop, you know, it's just little tracks at a time. And that creates an empty void. And then the artificial lens is now flexible, it's rolled up like a burrito, and it's inserted down a tube through that same incision. And as it comes into this space, it just unfolds and expands into that space. The surgeon pulls the instrument out. The incision is made in a stepwise fashion, so it seals itself, because you've got fluid inside the eye that creates pressure, so there's no stitches required, and then the surgery is done. So surgery is done today at a much lower vision level than it was when you had to pull the whole thing out. You had to wait for somebody to be around 2100 vision, because you had to wait for the lens to be dense enough. That surgery is no longer done in this country.
Does altitude affect the development of cataract?
I mean, over the course of your lifetime, yes, because you get more ultraviolet exposure at a higher altitude.
So that's why people in Nepal and places like that are...
That's exactly right.
Epidemic.
Right, yeah. Because they live there all the time. And nor do they have access to sunglasses. Right? So the same is true when I travel to Nicaragua to do eye care, and cataracts are, you know, they're 100% common like they are here, but probably 10 to 15 years earlier in life than they are here. Because they're more sunlight exposure, they're closer to the equator without sunglasses. Yes, sir.
My cousin had cataract surgery, and they replaced the lens.
That's right.
And then he said that he couldn't see that well, so they went back in and replaced and put a different lens in.
Okay.
How many times do they have to do it before they really find the right one?
Well, hopefully they only do it once.
Because on him, they did it twice.
Did it work the second time?
Yes.
Right. So there was something occurred in that first surgery where it didn't work. And so they can take the lens out. But that is very rare. Like probably less than 0.5% of people having cataract surgery would need to have a lens exchange.
I've had to have two lenses in both eyes.
Right.
But I knew that going in.
Mm-hmm.
That would have to probably be the case.
Yep. So they have two lenses, or they exchanged it?
He put in two new lenses. I had very bad astigmatism,
mm-hmm.
and I think that was probably one of the reasons why that.
So you've got two lenses inside the eye.
Two lenses.
Right.
In
they didn't
eye.
Take out the first one and put in a second one.
No.
They put them both in like a sandwich on top of each other.
No, I had needed two surgeries.
Right.
So they did one lens when they took out the cataract.
Yeah.
And then 2 weeks later, they put in the second lens.
Okay. Right. And that second lens is probably sitting in front of your iris. In the front. So because of the optics of your eye, that's what it took to create, to you know, correct the optics versus having you wear glasses.
Right.
Okay, so to go back to the question of legal blindness. So I'll just answer the legal blindness, but then I'll get to your macular degeneration. But legal blindness is by definition 2400 or less vision in the eye. And that's with glasses. So in other words, if I take off my glasses, my vision's around 21,000. Okay? Which it makes me legally blind. But when I put my glasses on, I become 20/20. So I am not legally blind. If I put my glasses on and my vision remained 21,000, I would be legally blind. So this legally blind definition is what is the best vision that I as an eye doctor can get for you as the patient with glasses. And if the best I can get is 2400 or less, then you're legally blind. 2080 to 2200 is what's called visually impaired. Okay, and 2040 to 2080 is slightly visually impaired. In the state of New Hampshire, you can have a daytime driving license only if your vision is better than 20/70. Okay, so they can give you a restricted license that allows you to continue to drive during the day as long as your vision is better than 20/70.
That's in both eyes or one?
That has to be in both eyes. In New Hampshire, for an unlimited license, both eyes have to be 20/40 or better. But if one eye is 20/70, the other eye has to be better than 20/40 to have an unrestricted license. So you have to be 20/30 or better in New Hampshire. Vermont, it's 20/40. One eye, both eyes, doesn't matter.
What about distance versus reading glasses?
So, what do you mean by that?
Well, I just got new. I'm doing. What am I doing? I had bifocals, and they were just driving me crazy. So now I went back to contacts, but they're only for distance.
Right.
So I use reading glasses to read.
Okay.
So in terms of.
So why are you doing that?
Yeah.
Well, because the lens inside your eye is no longer flexible.
Okay.
So once your vision is corrected for far distance with your contact lenses, the eye cannot change shape and pull your focus up here, so you have to put the glasses on to bring that focus
in.
And
that doesn't matter for driving, because I'm not going to...
As long as you're not driving with your reading glasses on.
Exactly.
You can drive like this, but with your reading glasses on, your vision would be too blurry.
Okay.
But if you're going back to contact lenses,
The
other option, and your eye doctor may have talked to you about this, is wearing monovision, one eye for distance, one eye for near, so you don't have to wear reading glasses, or a true multifocal contact lens, which is a contact lens that corrects distance and near simultaneously for both eyes, so you don't wear glasses at all. So there's lots of options today in the contact lens world. If you can't adapt to the glasses, that we can do with contact lenses to get rid of those reading glasses altogether. So
we'll have to talk to them.
We'll have to have a conversation with them.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. And there may be a reason, you know, where he just looks as well because of this or this, this is why you're wearing the distance only. But the monovision, our eyes naturally have a dominant eye. And if you're a shooter, you understand that because you want to shoot with your dominant eye. Your dominant eye is, with both eyes open, if there's a bird flying across the sky and I want to watch the bird, my left eye is going to lead my right eye to that bird. And I'm left eye dominant. So with contact lenses, we correct your dominant eye for distance vision and non-dominant eye for reading, and your brain just does the switch without glasses.
Yeah.
So that's how monovision works. Yes, ma'am.
So how does progressive glasses fit in with the distance and stuff?
So progressive lenses, when we talk about lenses for glasses, we can have a lens with all the same vision, and that's called,
single.
Very creatively, single vision. Okay? And then we've got the traditional bifocal. So you've got distance in the top and reading in the bottom. And the power of that reading lens is what determines the distance. Okay? But there's nothing in here. What's missing is the intermediate, meaning the dashboard of the car, the computer that's on your desk. And in today's environment, most of us are doing something with computers or some sort of electronics. So we need something in that arm's reach range. But a bifocal gives you vision out there and vision up here, nothing in the middle. Or the bifocal is set for the intermediate, then you can't read here. So you can see out there and you can see your computer, but you can't pick up a book and read unless you put it where your computer screen is.
Or you can go to trifocal, can't you?
Right. A trifocal stacks another lens on top for the intermediate, but that's again at a fixed focal distance. So you've got near, one spot in the middle, and then the distance. A progressive lens, in the lens that you can't see, is a channel, a design that looks like this.
And it can go really bad.
Okay? And if they're fit correctly, your eye sits right here. Okay, so as you look to the side, or you look up, everything is distance vision. Think of it as driving. If you're looking straight out over the dash of your car, everything's clear. You look up, it's clear. You look to the side to check your mirrors, it's clear. As you look down, The power very gradually changes to the reading power, which is the same as we had in the bifocal. So this zone is kind of the bifocal zone. But from here to here is everything else with clarity.
Now, I've been told that using progressives makes your eyes weaker.
That is total bunk.
That's what I thought.
That's like saying wearing shoes makes your feet weaker. Or wearing shoes is going to change the size of your feet. When the glasses, no matter what they are fit correctly, they work. But there are no glasses in the world that are going to affect the shape of this eye.
Right.
And the shape of the eye is what determines your prescription. It can cause eye strain and fatigue and all of this, but nothing makes it weaker. What's making it weaker is birthdays. Full of good news, aren't I? It's like gray hair. So wearing glasses can cause eye fatigue, but doesn't change anything about the physiology and how your eye ages. Now, if you're not used to wearing reading glasses and you put them on and you go, wait a minute, I'm finding I'm using these all the time, it's because your brain is saying, oh, this is easier. I can see so much better. This is a lot of work. Put those back on. But it's not making your eye weaker. You now have something to compare it to. And you like to see things clearly, so you naturally migrate to wearing them more, but not because your eye got weaker, it's because you like seeing better.
I had an issue with progressives. I think they're the greatest thing since whatever. But anyway, because I could not get used to that little thing in the middle.
The trifocal.
Trifocal or any of that. I couldn't get used to it. It was like having floaters there all the
time. Right. It's a line.
It's a line. I can't stand that.
Yeah.
But I had a problem that lasted 3 months. Between my eye doctor and the prescription being made, they had it like completely wrong between the two of them. I kept saying I want my eyesight distance to be as sharp as it can be.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I got into my car after the first one and my dashboard went like this.
Right. That wasn't as much that the prescription was wrong. It had more to do with what kind of plastic the lens was made out of.
Somebody else told me that, yes.
Okay, and the types of plastic we use change light at different strength. So the lighter weight, ultra-thin lenses use less plastic to get more focus, which means it bends the light faster. And for some people, that makes the table slope. Or it could be the curvature of the lens. But it's not the optics of the lens, it's how the lens was made. And that's something that I can't predict.
Right.
But I rely on you to walk back in the door to say, my dashboard is sloping, and we go, we know what that is. We need to remake the lenses. Because it's nothing you did or nothing I did, but until you put those lenses on, we couldn't predict that was going to happen.
Okay.
The key is, going forward, they have in your record, don't fit you with that kind of plastic ever again, or you'll just repeat history.
The other problem I had was, because I was driving at the time a lot, every day, just miles and miles around the state of New Hampshire, and also because I have a bad back, I sit up straight in my car, and they got it down too high. They got it up too high.
Mm-hmm.
So by sitting straight, I started having to do this to be able to see, and
right.
I was like really irritated.
Because my bet is, when you went to get fit for your glasses, you're sitting at the table with the optician, and they say, "Lean forward so I can measure where that is."
Yeah, exactly. And you're not
and
sitting straight.
So they get
straight.
The position, then you go sit in your car like this. Now the glasses are in the wrong spot.
And now they say they can do it just by looking at your eyes with this machine. I go, I know.
Well, yes and no. It depends on how what your head position is. But head position makes a big difference.
What's the vision on the two sides?
This over here?
Yeah.
So this is a zone that is a little bit blurry. So if you look down in the corner, this is more in with the traditional lenses, the traditional progressive lenses, if you remember the ones from 5 years ago or more. If you were wearing progressives and you look down here, this kind of was blurry, but it was clear here. With the lenses we're using today, it's called a digitally surfaced lens. So technology has made it so that a computer can create any surface we ask it to, whereas before the technology couldn't do that. So we were limited with the glasses, progressive lenses, to have a single surface on the front and then this uneven shape on the back to create these changes in power. Now the computers can create the same uneven surface on the back, but they can also create a corresponding uneven surface on the front. So half the power of the lens is on the back of the lens, half the power is on the front of the lens. And visually what happens is this is now like this. So you get much wider reading zones and essentially no distortion.
And is that analogous for contact?
No. The multifocal contact lenses look like a single vision lens, but in the lens, so here's your contact lens, you've got a lens with an uneven surface, and every one of these is a different power.
Uh-huh. Cool.
And what happens is when we read, our pupil gets smaller. Okay?
Yeah.
When we look up at distance, our pupils open up. So in the contact lens, you have more surface area in the center for reading, and you have more surface area in the periphery for distance. So as you just change your view, your vision changes with it.
Wow.
But there's no zone that you're looking through. It's completely different than glasses.
I would be happy to have glasses pretty much all the time, except when I play tennis.
Mm-hmm.
You have advice?
Goggles.
Well, without knowing what your vision is, that's a hard one to answer, because I've got a lot of patients that when the progressive lenses are fit correctly, play tennis just fine. I have other patients who say the same thing, and so they wear contact lenses when they play tennis and otherwise wear glasses. So it comes down to answer that question for you, it comes down to knowing what your prescription is and what we're dealing with and what the optics allow us to be able to give you the best individual answer. Does that make sense? Because I don't want to give you the wrong impression one way or the other.
No,
but really, there's all the options are on the table unless we have to narrow it down based on individuals' specifics.
Okay.
But generally, you put the glass, or you can wear glasses for distance only for playing tennis. Get the bifocal out.
I don't like that.
Right.
I've tried it.
Yeah. So the contact lens would probably be the better option for the tennis game.
In terms of nutrition, over my lifetime, I've heard all this business about lutein and other supplements.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any supplements that are essential, or, as you said at the beginning, nutritional sources in fruits and vegetables and an adequate diet? Should that be enough for the ordinary American?
If you don't have any other health issues, yes. But not if you have diabetes, or if you have macular degeneration or something else, or Crohn's disease where you don't absorb well. You know, so as long as you don't have anything else that can affect your digestive absorption, then yes, it should be okay.
For diabetics, then, what would be a reasonable supplementation?
So diabetics are different, because with diabetes, what happens over the course of your lifetime is diabetes starts to break down the inner lining of the blood vessel wall. And so the fluid that's in your bloodstream starts to leak out into the surrounding tissue. Think of it as a soaker hose in your garden. You know, the water just kind of leaks out of the hose, but it puts water in the soil. But if used as just a regular garden hose, the water would stay in the hose and bypass all those plants. And that's what our blood vessels are trying to do, is they're trying to direct blood to a specific area and not leak along the way. But the leaking along the way means there's less nutrients at the end of the road. But that's why getting an eye exam every year as a diabetic is so important, because when I look inside your eye, I see blood vessels. And they're the same blood vessels that are in your toes and your kidneys and everywhere else, but I'm looking for leakage. It may have nothing to do with your vision, It has everything to do with what's happening in your body. So your annual diabetic eye exam has less to do with vision, more to do with blood vessels. So if we start to see changes within the blood vessels, then I would put you on a specific supplement for a diabetic that is high in lutein, high in zeaxanthin, high in vitamin C, high in omega-3s, and other products that help support the integrity of the blood vessels and the nerves, so you can avoid the peripheral neuropathies that as you get older. But that brings us right into the most common question is macular degeneration. This little divot on the retina, that's called the macula. So when you have macular degeneration, this portion of the retina is breaking down. Now, I said earlier there's about 10 million cells inside your eye for your retina. 80% of those cells are there. The other 20% are spread around your eye for peripheral vision, which is why this is such a critical location for our vision. The optics of our eye are designed to focus all light down to the very center of our macula. And that's what allows us to see detail, which is why we don't see detail over here. We see motion. And our retinas are very sensitive to motion that gets our attention and we turn and we look, which is why floaters are such a pain in the butt.
Yes.
Because you see the motion and you turn to look to see what it is and there's nothing there because the floater's over here. So there's nothing there. But if you're out walking in the woods and you see motion, you turn and then you can see the deer or the animal or whatever that's moving. But you don't see the animal over here, you see motion. And you turn and you point your maculas at what you want to see. So when you have macular degeneration, this portion of the retina is breaking down. Okay? Now, the retina has 10 different layers to it, but to simplify it, you've got the pigment layer underneath the retina, called the choroid, and then you've got cells that are our retina cells, and they make connections. So what happens, and then these cells go across the retina, and they leave the eye through the optic nerve. Okay? The light comes in, activates this cell sends a signal to our brain, and our brain gives us vision. And just above the macula, we have a layer of what's called macula lutea. Macula lutea is lutein. Okay? That was labeled well over 100 years ago. But we didn't know what it was. We just knew when you look in the eye, we see this very pale yellow layer that's found nowhere else in the eye. And it wasn't until recently that we discovered that that is actual lutein. And it's lutein exactly the way it's found in nature. Your body absorbs lutein out of what you eat, brings it in with the bloodstream, and stacks it up on top of the retina up here. Okay? So when you have macular degeneration, you have less lutein, and the light that's coming in from the sunlight, think of it as ultraviolet and infrared light as well as visible light, over your lifetime has to be absorbed by that retina, so it's absorbing a lot of energy. And that energy can start to create damage. And then you get a breakdown in the choroid underneath the retina, and as the retina gets more exposed to ultraviolet light, it's getting less nutrients from the choroid, then the cell starts to die. Okay? And that's macular degeneration in a nutshell. Okay?
Is it reversible?
If you catch it early enough, in some patients, yes. So again, the importance of routine eye care. So when you take a nutritional supplement, so when I look inside your eye and I look in your eye, I see little clumps of pigment, or I see the missing clumps of pigment. So it looks like somebody sprinkled pepper under your retina. That's the earliest signs of developing macular degeneration. If at that stage you start to take a supplement that is high in zeaxanthin, which comes from yellow vegetables, yellow squash, yellow corn, yellow peppers, and high in paprika, you can rebuild this layer of pigment. But you cannot eat enough yellow vegetables or paprika to make a difference. You have to take a supplement for that to rebuild.
PreserVision.
Pardon?
PreserVision.
PreserVision, Restore, eye caps, all of those now have zeaxanthin in them. In addition, they have lutein. And lutein, at a higher concentration in a pill form, starts to replace this layer. Okay? And the layer that's in here that protects the cells from one another and the inflammation, here's our good old omega-3. Fish oil again. So, a supplement high in lutein, omega-3s, and zeaxanthin is the recipe that you need if you have macular degeneration. Yes, sir?
Is macular degeneration ever hereditary?
It's always hereditary. Or no, I'm sorry, it's always genetic.
Genetic.
So you may have had relatives that had the gene, but it never expressed itself, so they never had macular degeneration. But as you live, something else occurs that makes that gene express itself, and then it starts to break down.
I've heard of dry and wet macular degeneration. What is the difference?
So dry is what I just explained, where the retina just starts to break down. But the body is always trying to heal itself. So if the damage is enough, it'll start to take blood vessels and grow blood vessels into this tissue, this damaged tissue, to try to heal it. But any new blood vessel that we grow after we're an adult isn't the same as the blood vessel that we were born with. And it's very leaky. So the fluid leaks out into the retina and it makes this swell. And then it's called wet because it's got a lot of extra fluid in the retina. So then the surgeon then injects into your eye, which sounds horrible, a drug that helps the eye reabsorb that fluid. Yeah. Now, an injection in the eye is actually painless because the eye perceives light, not pain. So as horrible as that sounds, this works amazingly well. But if you're taking a supplement at the same time that you have this, you can almost triple the length of time that this works before you need another injection. Oh. So supplementation, even if you're getting the injections, is important because it can make, in some cases, it may mean you need fewer injections.
Using these supplements, is that advisable for somebody who has had, a father who's had macular degeneration?
Well, taking the supplement will never harm you. But taking a supplement when you have no reason to take it doesn't guarantee that you will prevent this from occurring. Because it may never occur to begin with. You see what I'm saying? So we don't have the ability to say, your father had it, and we can therefore look at your eye when you're 20 and say, you're going to get it, so you need to start taking these supplements. Or we would do that. But really, we have to say, okay, your father had it. Let's make sure we see you on an annual basis, because I'll see these changes underneath the retina 2 to 3 or more years before it affects your vision. Okay. And then when I start to see those changes, then I can say, your father had macular degeneration. We know how that ended, but he didn't have access to the technology and the treatment we have today. But let's get you on a supplement so hopefully you don't get to that stage. And only about 15% of people with dry macular degeneration become wet. So everybody with wet started out dry, because that's how it starts. But 85% of people will remain dry over the course of their lifetime. But we can slow down the rate of that damage by taking the supplements. But the only way to know if you need that or what's the right combination, because you have to factor in one of the medications you're on, is to have a conversation with your eye doctor.
Can you lose color perception with age?
Only if you have a neurological disease that causes it. So the answer is yes, but there's some other underlying factor.
Like what? What disease?
Multiple sclerosis.
Really?
Yeah.
Could do it. Anything that affects the neurology of your eye can affect your color vision. There are some medications that we screen patients for, like Plaquenil. We do a color vision test every year to detect early toxicity to that medication. And the best way to pick it up is through a color vision test. Diabetes can cause, over the course, late in the disease, can start to cause damage to your color vision because it's causing damage to your retina and to your nerves.
Right.
So just like you get peripheral neuropathy in your feet and your hands, you can get neuropathy to your optic nerve, which can affect your color vision. So the answer is yes, you can lose color perception as we get older, but if you're not born colorblind and now you're losing color vision, there's something causing that.
And what are drusen?
So drusen are just a part of the macular degeneration process that when the cells start to die, you get accumulations of lipid underneath the retina. And that's just a normal byproduct of the retina that's accumulating and not being carried away in the bloodstream of the choroid because the choroid is damaged and so it's not circulating it out. So I've got a patient, and I've got a picture that I share with my patients, and if I hadn't forgotten that I was going to be here today, I would have brought it. But back in 2014, her retina had these drusen underneath it that weren't yet distorting her vision, so she had early macular degeneration. We put her on Restore, a nutritional supplement with that recipe, and last year she came in and all the drusen are gone. And that's without any injections, without any surgery. And that's not a guarantee for everybody, but nutritional supplements are the only thing we know of that can make drusen go away. And it's not a guarantee it's going to do it for everybody, but if we see early drusen, it's the only thing we can do to help the body to reabsorb it. And if it's caught early enough, it can make a difference.
What dosage of lutein do you recommend?
So,
or what is the amount of lutein in Restore?
The amount of lutein in Restore is 8 milligrams per capsule, and you take 2 per day. So you're taking 16 milligrams of lutein. Okay? And the zeaxanthin, you're taking about 8 milligrams within there. And the omega-3, you're back to the 2,000 milligrams of omega-3s, along with vitamin C, along with some what's called alpha-tocopherols, which are like grapeseed extract, all very powerful antioxidants that help reduce inflammation within the retina. But these are the three key ones that really can make the difference.
Is there harm in taking it if these three supplements?
No. In fact, zeaxanthin is so effective in improving our vision that the company that did the clinical studies on zeaxanthin did the study for macular degeneration. And what happens is our macular degeneration population is elderly. So we all have decreased contrast and less vision at driving at night. And as patients were put on zeaxanthin, it takes about 3 months to rebuild that pigment layer. Their contrast sensitivity, low light vision was getting better. So they took that same supplement and they did a clinical study with professional baseball players who have the peak of vision. they can see the stripes on the ball coming out of the pitcher's hand. Now, that's why they play baseball, because the rest of us can't see that. And they gave them the zeaxanthin supplement and showed that their vision, despite being ultra-healthy, gets better also. And the study was so effective that they got approval by the National Sports Foundation that zeaxanthin is an approved supplement for athletes to take. It's not considered doping to make your vision better. But the National Sports Federation is very, very careful about what they approve as a supplement for athletes, because athletes will do anything to make their performance better. So the science has to be there to say that it works. And so that's the other extreme. And then the last study they did was just with normal individuals like you and I, and did a study with zeaxanthin and showed that even in a normal average functioning eye, not the high performance or the low performance, that we can all see better at night in low light with the zeaxanthin supplement. Does that mean everybody should run out and go get it? No, it doesn't. But if a patient comes in and says, my vision is great, but at night it just keeps getting dimmer and dimmer, but it's otherwise good, then I'll say, well, hey, you could try taking a zeaxanthin supplement, but it's going to take 3 months for it to kick in before you start to notice a difference. And a bottle of zeaxanthin is about $30 a month. So it's not cheap, but if you truly have decreased night vision, then there is something we can do. But there's a cost associated with it. So that's why I'm not in the boat of, well, everybody should do it. It's all relative to the conversation and what your lifestyle is. But if you're a salesman and you're on the road all the time, or you're, you know, interstate truck driver and you do all your driving at night, then $30 a month for somebody like that is a pretty cheap investment to have better vision. But for the average person like me who gets up in the morning, goes to work, is in a building, comes out at night, drives a few minutes to get home, you know, is there a benefit for me to take a zeaxanthin supplement? Maybe, if my nighttime vision is that noticeable to me, but the likelihood is I'm not going to notice a difference. So, you know, I don't want to come in and say everybody should be taking a nutritional supplement, because that's not always true. There's lots of pros and cons. And the biggest cons are how they interact with other medications you're taking and other things going on in your body.
But the one that you just specifically recommend is the omega-3.
Right. Omega-3s are basically good for everybody. We can't eat enough in our diet to get omega-3s. And omega-3s lower our cholesterol. They keep your skin moist in the wintertime. They boost your tear film. They're good for your heart. If you have Alzheimer's or family history of dementia, they may be supplemental in terms of protecting that. So there's lots and lots of good clinical science that says taking an omega-3 supplement for everybody probably wouldn't be a bad idea. Unless you're on blood thinners or there's something else.
Can you get too many?
Probably. You can get too many of just about anything.
Yeah.
But, you know, but there are some dermatologists, for example, that have rosacea patients, and they put them on 4,000 to 5,000 milligrams of omega-3 per day. So there's probably an upper limit, but, you know, it would be high.
Someone said that her son has, because he uses the computer so much, has computer glasses.
Right.
Is that different from the...
So computer glasses can be defined as multiple things. When you're on a computer, you're at a sustained near distance, and that can just cause fatigue. So using a low power kind of reading glass can just help release that fatigue.
So regular reading glasses.
Regular reading glasses prescribed for the right distance. So not necessarily just the off-the-shelf one. Sometimes it's lower power than you can get at the lowest power off the shelf. But as computers have evolved, more and more computer screens, iPads, iPhones, the MacBooks, all are with the Retina display, they all have LED screens. And what an LED light source does, whether it's an LED light or an LED screen, it all emits very high frequency blue light. Now, blue light is not meant that it's blue that we see blue. It's in the blue wavelength of light, which is well below our visual spectrum. We can't see it. But high-intensity blue light easily passes through the eye and can lead to retinal damage over time. And some people are really sensitive to blue light. So some of the computer glasses that we're prescribing today have a coating on the lens that decreases the intensity of that blue light like a filter for your eye. Now, what's the real significance of the blue light? Is blue light is what controls our circadian rhythm. Our circadian rhythm is what tells us to wake up and what tells us to go to sleep. That means when the sun comes up, there's blue light. When the sun goes down, there's no blue light. When the sun goes down, there's no blue light. 2-3 hours later, our brain starts to release something called melatonin. Melatonin makes us sleepy, and we go to bed. So if you're sitting in your house after the sun goes down and you're reading on your iPad, as far as your brain is concerned, the sun is still up because of the blue light coming out of that LED screen. And then you turn it off, and you go to bed, and you toss, and you turn, and you just can't quite relax, and it takes you an hour to fall asleep because it takes that long for the melatonin to start kicking in. Now, does that happen to everybody? No. But we are seeing much more of it with kids who are in school. Because more and more things are being pushed to the electronic surface. Their homework is there. They're on Facebook. They're on their apps. They're talking to their friends. And they're all evening they're on in front of the screen. And then they can't get to sleep. And then they get a restless night of sleep and they go to school and they're all rambunctious and they can't concentrate because they haven't got that real deep sleep that we all need. So the advice as a pediatric doctor, because I switch hats and I do pediatrics also, to parents whose kids aren't getting good sleep or they're a little rambunctious in the classroom and they're being referred in to see if they have a vision problem, is I now ask, how much time do they spend after dinner on the computer screen? And if they say, oh yeah, they just play their video games and all that, it's like, nope, close it up an hour before they need to go to bed. Turn off the sun, and kids get better sleep. And that is all something that's being discovered as technology changes way out in front of us. So as eye doctors, we can't say, whoa, wait a minute, slow down, maybe everything shouldn't become LED. It's too late for that.
Yeah. What about the LED television?
Same thing, but with the television, you're usually sitting far enough away that it's not as intense as when it's right in front of you. So it's not as much of an effect. But if you find that you're not sleeping well, pick up a bottle of melatonin and take a melatonin a half an hour before you want to go to sleep. Kick it in with your brain. Melatonin doesn't hurt anybody, and it works really well to help you relax and go to sleep.
Didn't do a thing for me.
Didn't make a difference.
Didn't make a difference.
And that's the thing, is sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't.
Yep.
Would you compare Xanthan with PreserVision in terms of effectiveness?
Well, so PreserVision has some zeaxanthin in it, but not at this dose. So my opinion is, right now, there's one supplement out there that works the best, and that's called Restore. And you can order it online, but it's not available in stores. Uh-huh. But in my opinion, and I'm just one opinion, that one works the best. And why is that my opinion? Because I pay attention to all the studies that are done. Why is PreserVision so well marketed? Because who makes PreserVision? Ocean Long.
Sure.
Who was originally paid by the FDA to do a study that says, hey, we're hearing all this stuff that supplements can help with macular degeneration? Nobody's going to do a study on a supplement because you can't patent vitamin C. Right. You can't patent omega-3s. You can patent lisinopril, right? But you can't patent vitamin C. So if a drug company says vitamin C works, well, guess what? They don't have any rights to vitamin C. So what the FDA did for the first time is they say, you do the study, we will give you the patent on the recipe. Okay? There's always a little bit of politics in everything, isn't there?
Yep.
So, but to Bausch & Lomb's credit, they did the study. And they proved all the anecdotal studies that were out there that those scientists were right. Taking a nutritional supplement can make a difference. So they got the right to sell PreserVision as that, you know, under that recipe. And Bausch & Lomb is very integrated with the American Academy of Ophthalmology, so it gave them a lot of offices to say, start using PreserVision. And so it's just a natural way that something got introduced into the market. It was the first one on the market, so it became the most popular. But in my opinion, it's fallen behind in terms of where science is leading all of this, and is kind of playing catch-up versus being the leader anymore in terms of what combinations work the best. And there are smaller companies like ZiaVision that's out doing those studies to show that it works. Now, why do they do it? Because they see other markets, like the National Baseball League. I mean, they can do the science, and then they can say, hey, our product works better than PreserVision, and it's approved by the National Sports Foundation, so your athletes should take our product. They're in the business of selling a supplement. I'm not naive to that, but they're doing good science, and they're showing that it works, and they're keeping up in front of everybody else. Why? Because they want to be the leader out there, but they're also expanding the market. But does that mean you shouldn't take PreserVision? No. PreserVision works. Eye caps work. But in my opinion, Restore works better.
You spell it, see, Anthony.
Yeah.
That's it. Make it nice and large.
Amazon.
Too long for Scrabble. Yes.
Do flutters go away, or does your brain just... Yes.
Well, they don't go away. No, they reposition, and your brain gets accustomed to seeing them. Okay. So just like when you're wearing glasses, your brain gets accustomed to seeing the frame, so you don't see it anymore unless you look for it. Your brain can adapt to the floaters so you don't see them.
Are floaters always... Like, mine seem to be long strings.
They're just random shapes.
Just random shapes.
Think of it as a spider web that collapses.
Okay.
It can collapse into any shape.
Are there any particular companies that you would recommend, say, getting lutein from? I mean...
No, lutein is readily available.
And you can go to any drugstore and pick up lutein, and they're all the same?
Correct. Now, if you don't have to worry about the blood thinning effect or vitamin K levels, you can eat 3 servings, 1 cup servings of spinach every week, not every day. So if you think you've got lunch and dinner 7 days a week, that's 14 meals. If out of those 14 meals you eat 3 cups of spinach, you will get more lutein in the spinach than you will if you take a supplement every day. Okay? So can you get this in the grocery store? Lutein, yes. But lutein is very high in vitamin K, which is a very powerful blood thinner. So you can't eat spinach by that amount if you're on a blood thinner.
Right.
Okay, so this is where the conversations come in with your doctor, where they understand what medications you're on, and you ask the question, if you're not on a blood thinner, do I tell people to go buy lutein? No, go buy spinach. You get much more vitamin A, you get the vitamin K, and you get the lutein. And it doesn't matter whether the spinach is cooked, frozen, fresh. Lutein is lutein. It doesn't change as it's cooked.
Wow.
And your body doesn't change it. When it absorbs it, it just takes it straight to the eye and puts it where it belongs. It's pretty remarkable. Mm-hmm. But you cannot eat enough yellow to get the zeaxanthin for that effect.
Does that mean carrots?
Carrots are orange.
Oh, okay.
Carrots are high in beta carotene. Beta-carotene is what makes up vitamin A, and it takes 20 units of beta-carotene to make 1 vitamin A. So carrots are not efficient sources of vitamin A, which is why rabbits don't see well. They see motion, but they don't see well. So carrots are not... Common myth is that they're good for the eyes. They were thought to be good for the eyes because beta-carotene makes vitamin A, But spinach has much higher levels of just straight vitamin A. And the body doesn't have to build the vitamin A out of the beta carotene. So you have to eat a lot of carrots. They're high in vitamin C and other things, but they're not a good source of vitamin A for the eye.
That's one of the one of the two vegetables I ate as a child.
Yeah.
And it was raw carrots. I couldn't eat anything. I couldn't even eat cooked carrots.
Right. All right, so it looks like our time is kind of wrapping up, so I'll take one more question if there is one. Yes, ma'am.
About a laser for corrective lenses.
For vision? Because there's lots of lasers used in eye care. That's why I was asking. So the laser to correct your vision, in other words, make you get rid of glasses, is a laser that sculpts your shape of whatever you need for your vision into the surface of the cornea. So it's changing the shape of your cornea in the same direction that the shape of your lenses are that correct your vision. The laser correction for vision only corrects your distance vision. You will still need reading glasses if you're over the age of 45. So if your goal is to completely get rid of glasses, you have to do it when you're around 25. Because at 45, you're going to go back into glasses. Because this continues to age. And the laser you had out here doesn't do anything to the aging of this. And aging is aging, which is why we're in the Aging Resources Center, right? All right, any other questions? Well, it's been a pleasure. I do apologize for being late this morning, because I really enjoy coming up here and having these conversations. And if you have any questions, feel free to contact my office. We always take new patients. I'm happy to answer questions. I'm not here to recruit you out of another office, but if you have another question from your doctor and you want a little clarification, just call me and let me know. Okay?
Thank you.
You're very welcome.
What is your office called?
Fields of Vision Eye Care.
Oh, I've heard of that.